And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and this is another edition of Cottage's Confidential Roundtable featuring the writers of Cottage's Confidential. Tonight joining me is Cottage's Confidential editor Andrew Beck. Along with him is James Eade making his debut. We have much to discuss in this episode. Before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host to the show first, making his debut. James, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Nice to be finding the shot.
Listen, I'm very happy to have you on the show, James. You've been writing a great deal, so I look forward to speaking to you about what you've been writing and also just talking film with you.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, and also on the line with us is the editor of Cottage's Confidential, Andrew Beck. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. I've got this weird sense of optimism about Fulham, and I'm not sure what to do about it.
We could tackle that during this show because I have a little optimism as well, but it's difficult because I'm trying to keep it in check, guys, but I am feeling a little optimistic. But I'm sure after the show I'll still feel optimistic, but, you know, it's a difficult one because you don't want to get too high on this, but things have been looking good so far. But, guys, let's start with the show. Let's start with player signings and departures, and it's been a few weeks since we did a show, Andrew, so I'm going to start with you. And let's start with the signing of Sone Aluko, who came on free transfer from Hull City. Just your overall thoughts on this signing. I know it's a few weeks old. What do you make of him joining Fulham?
I liked it at the time. In fact, when we were going through kind of our off-season plan, he was one of the guys we thought might be a good fit at Fulham. And he kind of looks like he could play the same sort of role that Moussa Dembélé played. So, I mean, he's a little bit probably more flexible than Moussa Dembélé. You could play him out wide as well, but he's that same sort of kind of athletic, faster guy that could pair up top with the rest, but then he could also play, if you're playing like a 4-3-3 or 4-3-2-1, play in one of the wide attacking positions as well. So, yeah, to me, there's almost no downside to it. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a fairly good player. He's had success at this level. Unless he's making a whole boatload of money, I don't see any downside to it.
I'm there with you. James, over to you. Your thoughts on the signing, and I just want to throw this in. I just did a show with Mike Gregg, and the one thing that actually interests him about Aluko watching him is that Aluko seems to be someone that can really make the key pass, and he actually did last night. So he might be someone that might be able to rack up some assists along with scoring goals. What are your thoughts about the signing of Aluko?
Well, I agree totally with Andrew. I think he's a great signing. You know, he supplies a bit of cover in the pace. We've definitely been needing a lot of pace. And it just remains to be seen how he links up with Ross, really. If he can play off his interchanging passes, we could have a good player on our books there.
Okay, very good there, my friend. If we played, say, like a 4-4-1-1 or even a 4-4-2, is that a role where you think he could fit in well, you know, like right behind the striker or our partnership with McCormack? Is that what you're going on this?
Yeah, I believe he could play either or. He could play the centre-forward role or the out-and-out striker. That's obviously they could swap it around and...
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, let's move on, and I'm going to go right back to you, James. What are your thoughts on center-back, right-back, Tomas Kalas signing with Fulham on loan from the other club in Fulham? David Howley does not want me to say his club's name, so I'm not going to say his club's name out of respect for David. You know the club's name. What are your thoughts about the signing of Kalas?
Well, the key there is versatility. As you say, he can cover the right-back role if Fredrickson's out or needs rest. He has league experience. Obviously, he saw promotion last season with Middlesbrough. He's quick and he's physical as well, and they're all stuff we need. So I think he's a good little acquisition there.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Andrew. What are your thoughts about the signing of centre-back/right-back Tomas Kalas?
I'm pretty excited about it. Middlesbrough's defense last year was really, really good, and he played a lot of games for them. So, I mean, you can't be in a defense that good, and if you're just not a good defender. So he must be a pretty good defender. I haven't seen him play that much, and the versatility is good that he can cover right back. I also think that that's kind of important that we still don't know, but if Slavisa was going to ever play three at the back, he makes a perfect right-sided center back, and Tim Ream is a perfect left-sided center back. So you've got Maddle in the middle, so he's flexible in that way as well. So again, it's no downside. I mean, obviously, I would have liked to have a center back that's more than on loan, but if you're going to get a guy on loan, this seems to be exactly the kind of guy you want to get. And there's always a chance that the other club in Fulham is willing to sell him at the end of the year because they have so many youth prospects, and that's just kind of their MO. They just loan them out all over the world and kind of make money on them when they sell them off.
Okay, very, very good there, my friend. Right back to you, because this is something that Mike Gregg pointed out on the prior show. Richard Stearman came off the bench very late. If they play three at the back, if they decide on a two pairing of, say, Maddle and Ream, or Collison and Maddle, or Collison and Ream. Could Richard Stearman be the odd man out because of Collis?
I think he probably is. A lot of it depends on if they're going two, if they're going to be playing two at the back or three at the back more often.
Right.
Because if they're going to be playing two at the back, Stearman's probably the fourth guy. I mean, you obviously, with as many games as we play, you're going to need a fourth guy quite a bit, but he's probably going to be that fourth guy. If you're playing three at the back, Stearman is still the fourth guy, but because there's always three of them playing, he'll get a lot more playing time.
Okay, very good. Back over to you, James. What are your thoughts about this? Because this is something that Mike and I just talked about, and I just find it's very interesting that Richard Stearman was left out to the very end of the match. He did score the goal. Good for him. He scored the goal. But could he see himself as the number four out of the four center backs we currently have?
It's a tricky one, but yeah, I think he probably does find himself sliding down that pecking order now. Like you said, he did come off the bench and supply cover at the right back position, but I think, as you say, with Maddle and Callas, we've got a good solid partnership to bloom there possibly, and they've both shown championship experience last season, so I believe that them two will probably be our number one choice, definitely at the back. So yeah, I think he's finding himself pecking orders.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, right back to you. What are your thoughts on fullback Dennis Odoi signing with Fulham? And he made quite an impression last night, especially in the second half. What are your thoughts of this signing?
Yeah, I've got that written down here, especially so with the got standing ovation from the crowd when he's battling for the possession last night. I think he's going to be a fan favourite. He, you know, he's got that swagger about him in the interviews. He's got something a bit cheeky about him as well. He brings pace to the game, what we much need as well. I can't emphasise enough how much we need pace in the team. So, and he's very well thought of on the continent. He was at Anderlecht before he joined Lokeren. I believe it's pronounced Lokeren. But
yep.
So I think we've got a good sign in there.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Andrew. James brings up a good point. It's something that Mike said as well. He's probably going to be a fan favorite. I know it's early on, but he made quite an impression last night. What are your thoughts about this signing?
I like it a lot. I like that he can play both fullback positions. He can play as a wing back on either side. That's, you know, I really do like flexibility. I'm a big fan and a big believer in that your team needs to be able to play a few different ways depending on matchups and who's healthy. And he adds a lot of that. He's fast, which I like. The only thing I'm hesitant about is that I remember Kostas Stafalidis looking just absolutely dynamite in the preseason before, and then just having just a horrible year. So I don't want to get my hopes up too high, but I think his track record is a lot better than Stafalidis ever was. So I'm much more apt to believe that this is going to carry over.
Now, let me ask you this, because he actually did play both fullback positions in this match. He can play both. He is right-footed, but he likes to play left back. What are your thoughts on that? Are you comfortable with someone that is right-footed but plays left back?
With a right-footed player, yeah, I am, because I feel like, just this is just from my experience and anecdotal, it seems to me that right-footed players in general use their left foot more and better than a lot of left-footed players use their right foot. So I'm pretty confident that he can use his left foot well enough. And I don't think that in the modern game, your fullbacks are just going to run to the end line and throw in a cross with their left foot. You know, he's going to be much more keeping possession, cutting a little bit, holding possession, playing short passes. So having just not being able to just whip in a ball with your left foot from the end line isn't the biggest deal in the world. So, and he's played more games at left back in his career. I looked it up. He's played more games than left back in his career at right back, although they're pretty close.
Okay, very good. James, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think, as you said, I don't think it really brings much to the modern game. I believe there's going to be a lot more passing. The ones would be running up to the byline and crossing it in. I haven't really given it much thought, to be honest, but I don't believe it will impact his game much. He's obviously shown that he's got talent, and I don't think it will bring much difference to his game whatsoever.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, I'm going to come right back to you. I'm going to give you the honors to start this conversation. It's going to be an interesting one. What are your thoughts on the swap deal as Fulham get left-back Scott Malone from Cardiff City, and going the other way is right-back Jazz Richards? Both supporters groups, both Cardiff City fans and Fulham fans, think that they got the better of this deal, which is fascinating. What are your thoughts about the swap deal?
Well, I think with our fans, they're just more happy we got Jazz Richards out the door than anything. I think they're more optimistic about that than actual Maloney himself. But I do believe he'll be a second to Odoi. But then again, he does have the championship experience, what may seem pivotal to actually see him play a bit more. But again, that's down to Slavisa and what he seems fit.
Okay, so you see him as a squad player. I said that on a prior show as well.
Yeah, I agree. He's more of a squad rotational player.
Okay, but like you mentioned, he does have that experience. Over to you, Andrew. What are your thoughts on the swap deal? And also, do you see him as a squad player?
Yeah, I think if you're penciling in Odoi to be the starter at left back, he's probably your first backup, with like Tim Ream maybe as your third backup there. So he's probably a squad player. He'll still probably get a lot of minutes, especially if you're playing like a 4-4-2 with four at the back. I think he makes a lot of sense in that kind of formation. I think Jazz Richards, I mean, he's one of the players I wanted to see gone, but I don't think he's a horrible player. I just think that he's the kind of player that he needs to be. If he's in a good defense, he'll be okay. But if you put him in a little bit of pressure and a defense that's not so good, he's just going to fall apart. So, I'm kind of glad to see him gone. I think that the Cardiff fans might be overrating him simply because he was on that Wales team that did so good in the Euros. That probably overrates them in his mind. And to me, it's just good business. We were with Odoi being able to play right back. Callis can play right back. You have Fredericks at right back. Even Tim Ream can play right back. You have Jack Grimmer still around, can play right back. Stearman can play right back in a pinch. It was good to get rid of. That's like one of the positions that we had the most depth at, and left back was one of the positions we had the least depth at. So you're swapping out a player that you really don't need for some depth at a position that you're hurting at, to me, is just really good business.
Yeah, I have actually no problem with this. And James, you know, again, this is the first time I've talked to you. Do you see this as addition by subtraction? It sounds like where you're going on this. You said the Fulham supporters just wanted Jazz Richards gone. Be curious your thoughts. Did you want Jazz Richards gone?
As Andrew said, I don't think he was a terrible player, but as our defence was a bit shoddy last season, I think that it was a lot more noticeable. As he said, if he put him in a better defence, it might not have been so noticeable. But as also stated, that it would be good to get more cover on that left-hand side. He can also supply a bit of cover on the left midfield role as well, what's also pivotal, as we're also still sparse on the whole of the left-hand side.
So, you know, again, the hope here is that, you know, listen, I don't wish Jazz Richards anything bad. I actually hope he works out. But I also hope that Scott Malone works out. Both players benefit from a change of scenery. That's what I hope that happens. It'll be interesting to see in a year's time who gets the better of the deal. And we shall see in due time. All right, back over to you, James. Let's talk about the signing of David Budden. There have been speculation for about a week on this. Well, he finally did sign with Fulham from Brentford. What are your thoughts about this? He played a ton of matches with Brentford. So do you think this is a very good signing for Fulham?
Well, he's been ever-present in the Brentford side, so I think with this signing, we've gone at him for a number one role, and Bettinelli will drop to sort of be his understudy. He, as you say, he's played loads of games, so he's got the experience. And I think it's a great signing for us. Riddle stole it under the nose of local rivals.
I agree with you on that. But before I go to Andrew, I just want to clarify. You see him as coming in, having that starting goalkeeper role, and basically Marcus having to fight to get it back.
Yeah, I do. I believe that he'll bring a lot more competition to the squad, as competition is always good for a squad going throughout a 46 game season.
Okay, very good. I agree with that. And I wanted someone that actually could come in that could potentially start. And, you know, listen, he has the experience. He could come in and start. And if Marcus wants the job, he's going to have to win the job. That's the way I'm looking at it. Andrew, your thoughts on the signing of David Budden? Do you see him as potentially the starter like James does?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he would have signed here. I mean, he's still only 27, which for a goalkeeper isn't old at all. I don't think he would have signed if he didn't. He wasn't kind of told that you are the expected number one goalkeeper. It's your job to lose. So I think he was probably told that. Now, that being said, he's not so great that if Bettinelli just isn't lights out, can't win the job from him. Bettinelli has enough talent where if he plays really well, he could still win the job. And I think that's kind of the perfect situation to put Bettinelli in. You bring a guy in who's probably a little bit better, has more experience, but you'd basically tell them, you have the talent to beat this guy, and if you do, you're going to start, but you're going to have to go out and win the job.
Right. And, you know, and that's why I see this as a great situation, because it's going to push Marcus. If Marcus wants to be the number one goalkeeper, he's got to win it. And, you know, same thing with Budden. You know, it's a positive situation to have two goalkeepers fighting for one job. But I agree with both of you. I think Budden came in thinking that he was going to be the number one goalkeeper, and I see this as a situation to motivate Bettinelli to say, you know what, it's my job. So I like the fact that he came in. And competition is healthy, and I'm glad that David Budden has joined Fulham. All right, guys, let's move on, and we're going to go into the Cottagers Confidential Writer Spotlight. We're going to start with an article by you, James. It's entitled, Is Hal Robson-Kanu Missing Piece of the Jigsaw Puzzle? You asked the question, would you like to see Robson-Kanu at Fulham? So before I go to you, James, I will go over to Andrew. Andrew, what are your thoughts on what James wrote about Hal Robson-Kanu? Would he be the perfect fit for Fulham?
I don't know if he's the perfect fit. He probably would be a good player to have around. The only thing that gives me a little bit of hesitation is we've seen this, not really at Fulham, but we've seen it at other times where a guy goes out, has either a good World Cup, a good Euros, a good Copa America, and gets on the radar in a lot of places, and he's the next big thing. People overpay for him, and then he goes back to being what he always was. And Kanu hasn't had he hasn't had the greatest run in the championship. He's been okay, but he hasn't been like a guy that you're going to go all out to want to sign. So I'm a little bit worried that he might be overpriced simply because of what he did at the Euros.
Okay. Very interesting. And James, back to you again. This isn't speculation. This is just something that you're throwing out there, that you would like to see them sign Hal Robson-Kanu because you think he would be a perfect fit. Why don't you go into a little bit more detail what you wrote about it?
Well, as you say, after the Euros, he's now actually a free agent. And I believe that someone with that championship experience, even though he may not have performed that well in the championship last season, he showed a bit different side to his game when he put on the Wales jersey. I don't know if it was a style of play or passion, but he sort of brings that, we're talking about Troy Deeney, Deeney style of play. I think he can, and also he can cover on the left-hand side. So, you know, I just thought he can fit two jobs. He might not start either of those, but he's maybe a squad rotational player and he can cover two areas. So I believe that's what I thought would be a good final piece to the jigsaw, really.
It's so funny that you said Troy Deeney, because that's exactly what I was thinking, because I personally think that in his heart of hearts, Savita wants a Troy Deeney type. And as you mentioned, Robson Kanu fits the bill, James.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it looks like he may be joining Hull, but a player similar to his playing style would be great.
Okay, very good. Very, very interesting article that you wrote. And again, the big thing to come out of it is you know, you try to think about what is Slavisa looking for, and I think he's looking for a Troy Deeney type, and you diagnosed a player that actually fits that criteria, but he could be going someplace else. You're just throwing it out there. Very interesting article. All right, let's now talk about another article. This one by Adam Bronsmith. The article is entitled "Fulham's Preseason Dominance Continues," and this really is about the match last night. I'm just going to read an excerpt. This is from Adam's article. Four games into preseason and Fulham have kept the same amount of clean sheets as they did during the entire 2015-2016 season. Fulham have been incredibly impressive over the preseason to date, winning all four games, scoring 16 goals in the process, and are yet to concede in the four games they have played. Interesting so, Fulham have been scoring freely without their star striker, Ross McCormack, who has been absent from the preseason squads for many different reasons. With Colly Woodrow, Matt Smith, Floyd Ayite, and Sone Aluko racking up the goals and assists, it seems that should Fulham lose the talismanic striker, the club would be in safe hands for the upcoming season. Last night, Fulham comfortably beat Brighton 3-0 as the game was hosted at Aldershot, an impressive feat considering that Brighton were a side narrowly lost out on automatic promotion and beat us 5-0 earlier in the season. He goes on to discuss some players that stood out, Dennis Odoi, Ryan Session. Later on in his article, he talks about Fulham being linked to James Wilson from Manchester United. There is much speculation about that. Then he also talks about Alejandro Forlan, as he did not play in this match, and maybe that's a bad sign of Fulham maybe not signing him. All right, Andrew, I'm going to start with you. Your thoughts on the article from Adam about the match last night, and just your overall take on last night's match and the preseason overall.
I'm usually not one to get really worked up about preseason results, but this is pretty impressive, and mainly just simply because of the defense. A lot of times in preseason, you'll see a lot of defensive mistakes just because guys aren't used to playing together. They're maybe learning a new system. A lot of times you just see a lot of bonehead things happen and give up goals, but they've played really good defense, and that leads me to believe that maybe Slavisa's got the defense figured out, because that has just been the issue with Fulham for at least almost 3 years now. It's just that the defense has been abysmal. So that has really kind of got me excited, and I have a history of getting excited about Fulham and having them rip my heart out, but I don't know what else to say. It's just the idea of getting through this much of preseason without giving up a goal is just kind of amazing to me.
Listen, I'm there with you, and over to you, James. What's interesting about this, and listen, I talked to Mike about this on the review show. Brighton are a team that was obviously at the top of the division, lost out in the playoffs, but a team that, you know, had a fantastic season, and I know it's just a friendly. I understand that. I understand that each team is playing a bunch of different players. But they have kept now consistently clean sheets. That, to me, is the one thing that has stood out for me in all of these friendlies, not the goals, it's the clean sheet. So I want to get your thoughts on the match last night, his article, and anything else in dealing with the preseason so far.
Well, I have to agree with you there, Russ. We're, as you say, no goals conceded over five games now. It seems that Slavisa, without jumping them, is that he may have sorted out this defence. What we saw was abysmal last season. And so we've had the very lack of seeing any action of Ross whatsoever, and we've scored, was it 19 goals in five games? It just seems that whatever Slavisa's playing, his tactics are working. And it's kept me very optimistic, I must say. But so I don't want to get too excited and ahead of myself yet, but things are looking bright.
Yeah, they are, James. And like I said, for me, it definitely starts with the defense. But the other thing that has really shown itself, and I want to get your thoughts on this, it's a style of play. And we'll have to see how dramatic a difference it is. But if you watch Slavisa's video with Sarah Brooks, Sarah asked him about the style of play, playing one up front, you know, really – it seems like it's more like a 4-4-1-1, or, you know, that's what it seems like, a main striker with someone right behind him, because Sonny Aluko was playing right behind Colley Woodrow last night. But it really is, it's the pace and the wing play and the overlapping from the fullbacks. I think that's what really, besides the defense, James, that's what has me optimistic. It's the style of play.
Yeah, we've added a pace and a punch, haven't we? It was absolute. We were lacking a lot of pace last season. And that's what the new style of play is based solely around pace, passing, quick play. And so Luko's been playing those through balls, and he's sitting just behind the striker, and he's playing those through balls, and we've got people running in on the overlap. I'll just say pace, pace, pace.
Exactly, exactly, and that to me is so important. Andrew, over to you, because again, this is something that we've complained about. We've talked about this many times, the lack of pace. So far, there's been an abundance of pace. It seems almost like we've gone from 0 to 360 with pace. So I want to get your thoughts on that, and also, in regards to the pace, there is an issue that hasn't been resolved, I feel. And that's in central midfield, because you can have all this pace, but I think you need a really good defensive midfielder and someone that can actually really, really pass the ball from central midfield. So we can have all this pace, but I still think the job isn't done. There's speculation linking Fulham to a few different central midfielders, Kevin McDonald being one with Wolves. So I want to get your thoughts on the pace, but do you agree with me that they probably still need to upgrade central midfield to basically complement the pacey play?
Yeah, that's kind of the one hole I see left in the squad right now. If we're playing, and it seems like we're playing variations of basically a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1. It's kind of how Slavisa has lined us all up in the preseason. So you're going to be playing two central midfielders at a time. And you've got Tunnicliffe, you've got Parker, then you've got Christensen, and then it starts to be a little iffy about who's next in line. So you definitely are going to need at least one more, especially since you're not, at this point in his career, Parker is just not going to be able to play that many games. So that's the one hole, and that's also probably where we're still the slowest. Parker is not that fast anymore. Christensen has some speed. Probably he's okay for the position, and Tunnicliffe's okay for the position, but they're not, neither of them are what you would call burners back there. So that's kind of the one fold. I was a little bit worried up at striker, but I think with all the guys we've got who can play striker and play on the wings, as long as McCormick doesn't leave, I actually don't think that striker's a really big problem. And if we're going to mainly play two center backs, I don't think the center back position is that big of a need right now, because I think we have quite a few center backs to rotate. I mean, if Stearman is going to be your fourth guy in a when you're playing two center backs at a time, that's not really that bad.
Okay, very good. Back over to you, James, because this is something that I've really been thinking about. Okay, he's building a squad. we've been linked to all these central midfielders. Alejandro Forlan was a trialist. Kevin McDonald, Thomas Delaney. I think this is the biggest hole to fill. It sounds like Andrew agrees with me. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I have to agree. I'm in unison with you both. I think the players you just listed there, they're more holding players, and we need a player similar to the role of what Sissoko played in the World Cup for France. Someone, a powerful midfielder that plays them drive and run straight to the centre of the park. I think that's what we would really do with if we can find someone who plays that similar style.
Okay, very good. Very, very interesting. You know, again, very interesting article by Adam Bronsmith. Please check it out because it's a good review of the match last night. And please do check out the review show that I did with Mike Gregg. Mike did an excellent job. He was obviously at the match, and he breaks down exactly what happened against Brighton and Hove Albion. And listen, I know these are just friendlies, but sorry, I cannot ignore, James. I'll go right back to you before we move on from this. I have a hard time ignoring destroying Preston North End in our own division, beating Brighton and Hove Albion. I'm going to throw this in, too, that no one's talked about, okay? Behind the doors match with Tottenham Hotspur, okay? Beat them 1-0, another clean sheet. We've not talked about that. Some of their best players were not there, but others were there. And I think that we need to give the club credit for playing Tottenham Hotspur. Again, it's a friendly, and keeping a clean sheet against that side. What are your thoughts about that before we move on?
As you said, some of their star players obviously were absent, but they did play a reasonably full-strength team. A team of Tottenham's calibre, even if they were playing with their substitutes, they'd still be a low-end Premier League team. So the fact that we competed with them, and with some of our youngsters too, it's not like we played a complete full 11 either. And you say you have to give them their due for that one. That was a very good performance on their behalf. And it does fill me with optimism as well.
Okay. Andrew, over to you. You know, I just wanted to bring this up because we haven't talked about it on Cottage Talk. Anything about this behind the doors match on Saturday, and I wasn't even aware of it until I saw a tweet from one of the Fulham assistant coaches. I happened to see a tweet that they were preparing to play Tottenham Hotspur, and then, you know, again, you get the report. I looked at it this way, similar to what James was saying. I know it's a friendly. I know they're missing all of these players, but they still have all these other quality players that Fulham played against, and Fulham still did not give up a goal. So am I wrong to look at that match and talk about it?
No, I don't think so at all. To me, it was one of the more impressive things was this. That, yeah, Fulham wasn't playing, you know, their A-choice lineup. I'm pretty sure Luca De La Torre played. Sessegnon played. There were a lot of our young guys playing as well. And the thing that it kind of gave me hope for was actually the FA Cup and the League Cup runs. I think we might actually have a chance of doing something in the cups this year, simply because we have some young guys that might be just on the cusp of stepping up, because that Tottenham squad, well, it's not their first team. That's going to be the kind of Premier League squad that you play when you face one of those squads in the League Cup or the FA Cup. That's the kind of squad they're going to bring. And if we're able to compete with them with not our top squad either, that makes me think we could win a couple of games, which it's been a long time since we've done that.
Right. Now, very, very good point there, my friend. All right, let's move into the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable, since we pretty much were talking about the friendlies. We're going to move on from that, and we're going to go right into a topic that I actually put on the Cottage Talk Twitter page. And here's the topic. Do Fulham need a marquee signing? I started seeing a lot of chatter on social media, on Facebook, and also on Twitter that Fulham need a marquee signing. So I did a poll, 307 votes. That's a decent amount of votes. 66% said yes, we need a marquee signing. 34% said no. James, I'll go to you first. Do Fulham need a marquee signing?
Well, if you asked me this question before preseason, I would have been amongst those that said yes. But now, after we've had a pretty successful preseason so far, I'm happy with the squad without any marquee signings, because they don't always offer you the greatness what they live up to. After all, we've had Mitroglou, we've had Brian Ruiz, just to name a few, and I can't afford to have another one of them in our squad.
Now, see, those are two very good examples. Andrew, what are your thoughts about this? Because, again, I understand that fans want the big name. I've said time and time again, I'd be happy with a big name, but I want it to be the right player. I want the right players. The right players that come in that fit the way Slavisa wants them to play. The players so far, again, it's preseason, look like they fit. Potentially, they could be the right players. But I understand that fans want a marquee player. What are your thoughts about this?
I would say, as of right now, I don't think they need a marquee signing. The only place I would see you bringing in someone like a marquee kind of player would be in central midfield, and really good central midfielders are really, really expensive and really hard to come by. So I'd be happy with just a solid championship starter in that position who's, you know, a good player, but not like, you know, a world beater. That being said, if McCormick does leave, and there's always chatter about him leaving, if he does leave, then I would reverse my position and say, yes, we probably need a marquee signing at that point. But if he were to leave, we would probably also then have the money to go get a marquee player, because if McCormick leaves, it's going to be for quite a bit of money.
Now, going right back to you, you said you want a championship-proven central midfielder. Kevin McDonald fits that bill. Again, we've been linked to him. I don't know what's going on with that. He wouldn't be a marquee signing. We've also been linked to Thomas Delaney in Denmark. Now, it's not, you know, again, it's, you know, it's a different league, but would you consider this for the championship a marquee signing?
Probably for the championship, it would be close to it. He's at the kind of age where he needs to move on from Denmark, or he's just going to be kind of one of those journeyman European players who sticks around lower leagues and maybe winds up in a league like MLS at 27. Because he does have some American roots, which is interesting about him as well. But yeah, he would be, for the championship, he'd be a pretty big get, because I think there have been some bigger clubs looking at him. But again, I'm always a little bit hesitant when you bring over guys from leagues that are similar to, or maybe a little bit less than the championship, of how they're going to adapt, because it's really, really hard to compare one league to another.
Okay, very good. Over to you, James, you know, because if you're asking me, I would love to see Kevin McDonald with Fulham. I hope they make that happen. There's been a ton of speculation, but then I'm thinking about this player that I don't really know a great deal about. There's, you know, I've read about him on Transfer Market. I read about him, I believe, on WhoScored.com, Thomas Delaney. He's pretty well thought of, but again, from Denmark. Would you consider that a marquee signing? Would you want to see him, or would you want to see someone like Kevin McDonald? Potentially both.
If I had to pick one of the two, I would say Kevin McDonald. As you say, he has a champion experience. And with Delaney, I'm not very well. I don't really know him that well, to be honest. I know quite a lot of European players and leagues, but I've never, he's not been on my radar, so I wouldn't really class him as a marquee signing. For me, a marquee signing would be a low-end Premier League team or one of the top championship teams. For a team like Fulham's calibre anyway, as I've said in a previous article of mine, we may not have the pulling power anymore. But I think with Jokanovic at the helm, I think a lot of players want to play for him. So I think we may retain a bit of that pulling power.
Okay, very good there, Martin. Very, very interesting discussion about marquee signing, because, you know, again, I understand why some fans want it, you know. But I always caution when I think about some of those other signings that were marquee signings. You mentioned them, James. You know, Brian Ruiz, Kostas Mitroglou. The big name might not always work out. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. For me, it's more important that you find the right guy, the right player to fit in with Slavisa. But, you know, if it happens to be a big name, so be it for the championship. But it's not necessary for me. But honestly, I do find it interesting that the majority of foam supporters want a marquee signing. I do. I find that interesting, and I respect it. I definitely respect that. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's now go back to all the signings so far this season, and I want you guys to rank them in importance that you think they will have for Fulham. You know, again, your thoughts on all the signings. I'm going to go through them. So the players are Michael Maddle, because, again, he was a lone player, then obviously signed with Fulham. Floyd Ayite, Sonny Aluko, Tomas Kalas, Dennis Odoi, Scott Malone, and David Button. I believe those are seven players. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. I want you to go through your rankings from, say, 7 to 1, if you don't mind, and just go through all of them, how you're ranking all these signings so far.
I'd say probably Scott Malone is probably the bottom, simply because I don't think that he's going to be a starter. He's just probably going to be depth. It's not a bad signing, but he's just going to be a depth piece. I'd probably actually put David Button 6th, and that's not a knock on him. It's just that I don't know that the upgrade from Bettinelli to him is huge. I think it is an upgrade, and if Bettinelli wins the job and improves because of that, that's an even bigger thing. But I just don't think that it's a huge upgrade in terms of what we already had. After that, I'd probably put Floyd Ayite and Dennis Odoi probably kind of tied for that fourth and fifth position. I'm putting them a little bit lower simply because I always am a little hesitant when guys come from other leagues. It can take some adjustment time. You never quite know how they're going to be when they're playing different styles in different countries. So that's why I've got Kalas probably next, because we know what he can do in the championship because he's done it before. He's been on a good defense before. The only reason he isn't higher, obviously, is because he's just a lone player. So if he's really – the better he is, the less likely it is that Fulham gets to keep him for a while. Sonny Aluko is probably next. I really love what I've seen from him. He didn't cost a lot. He's had success at this level before. I think that's a really good signing. And I'm putting Maddle the top simply because we've seen him in the club. And I don't have any doubts about how he's going to fit in because I've seen it. I liked what I saw last year. So I know that he can work with Slavisa. I know Slavisa likes him. So that kind of means to me that he has to me the lowest floor of any of them, where I know what he is and I'm happy with that. So that's a big thing to me. I like having some certitude about players.
Okay, so you're going with a seven, the best signing because we saw him as a lone player as Michael Maddle. I find that fascinating. I do like the fact that you have a center back because I think Collis should be high up. So I understand why you had him high up, but you didn't have him too high up because he's a lone player. But very fascinating that you have Maddle as number one. Very curious. I like that though. But I'll be curious to hear what James you have for your list. Start with the least and go to the best.
Well, I've come at it from a bit different approach. When you said about what impact that's had on the club, I've gone from Malone at last place, or seventh place. But as I said previously, I believe he'll be your second to Odoi. And interesting and probably a bit controversial, I've gone for Maddle at 6th. Purely and simply because I don't believe he won't really have an impact to the squad, as we already know he's part of the squad. Therefore, I can't see him having a new impact to the squad. So, and then next on the list, I've gone for Luko. Depending on how the formation sets up and how he links with Ross McCormack, if he does stay, will be the main one for that. Obviously, he's had a promising pre-season and already getting a few goals and assists. And next on the list, I'll go for Dennis Odoi because, as I say, we've been pretty sparse in the left-back position, and I believe that he'll bring an impact and improvement on that position. And then in third, I have Ayite because he's looked explosive and pacey throughout pre-season. He looks like he'll be a good addition to the squad. Second, I've gone for Thomas Kalas because we've been needing defensive cover and he brings that in the bucket load. So I've put him second. And controversially, I've gone for Button as first place because his impact to the squad, if he's not number one keeper, he'll push Bettinelli to become better. Therefore, his impact in the squad will work, be a win-win situation regardless.
Wow, very interesting way that you went with it. And listen, I did mention potential impact, and you went with that. Now, over to you, Andrew. Obviously, very different from your list. But what are your thoughts of James's list compared to yours?
It's one of those things where I think anyone could rank these different and still be right. I do understand, like, Button's impact could technically be huge because he's either pushed Bettinelli or we get a better keeper out of it. I just, my only question is, how much better is Bettinelli going to be? How much better would Button be than Bettinelli just if they both perform at 100%? I don't know how much that actually improves the squad. And I do understand that my Maddle thing is probably a bit strange. It's just, I really like knowing what I have. And I feel like Maddle, if he hadn't come back, I would have been really, really upset because I kind of liked him last year. I thought he brought a lot to the table. And he's the kind of center back I've always kind of liked having. He's not the big kind of burly slow guy. He's a little bit smaller and athletic, but still somehow manages to win balls in the air. So, I like him, but I can see how he was in the team last year, so his impact shouldn't have a new impact. It's just bringing the same thing over. So I can see how that's just a completely different way of looking at it.
Right, and very good point. Neither one of you are right or wrong. It's just your opinion. You're just approaching it in a little different way. I like how James approached it, but I also understand and appreciate how you approach it. That's why I thought it'd be fun to rank the signings. You both went about it in a little bit different way, which makes for an interesting discussion. All right, guys, let's move on. The club released and showed us all the new home kit. So, James, I'm going to start with you. Thoughts on the new home kit?
Well, mine actually arrived in the mail today, and I can say I love it. It's a lot lighter than last season's kit, and it's got a lot more air holes on it, and it just feels, I don't know, it's a lot more airy, and the design's nice. I don't know, I'm still 50-50 about the red stripe. I think, you know, the plain sort of black and white look would have been nice. But I just hope that no matter what the kit design, I just hope the players we got will fight for the badge that's on the chest.
Okay, very good. All right. Over to you, Andrew. Thoughts on the new home kit?
I liked it quite a bit. I like the red stripe. The only thing that I will say that I really don't like about it is, it's not that I don't like the Visit Florida as a sponsor. It's just in the baby blue on that kit, it just is a little, it kind of clashes to me. If they just swapped it to like a black font or put it in a red font, I think it would have looked a lot better. I know they're doing that for branding reasons, but that's the only downside to that kit that I really have, is just that the logo in the baby blue is a little odd looking.
Okay, very interesting. All right. I happen to like it. I hope to get one. It might take me a little while to get one, but I'm planning on ordering one soon. I happen to like the kit. I've seen back and forth. People are seems 50-50 on it. I happen to like it though, so I'm definitely gonna get it. All right, guys, I have a bonus topic for you. Yes, a bonus topic. We do have a little time left, so I thought I would throw one other topic to you guys aren't ready for. And, James, I'm going to go to you because it involves a James. Yesterday I saw some transfer speculation. I believe it started with the Sun, and then it spread to other outlets as well, linking Fulham to Manchester United young striker James Wilson. So let me ask you, first of all, what are your thoughts on this player, and would you like to see this potential loan deal happen with James Wilson?
Well, it was quite spooky, really, because at the end of last season, me and my mate were conversing. He's a Manchester United fan. We were talking about the possible signing that James Wilson should come to Fulham, and lo and behold, we may well be signing him with a possibility of signing him on a permanent. I think he's a good young player. He showed last season that he's half decent for a team, but nearly finished in the promotional. And I think he'll be a good young player to join the squad. You know, he'll give Cooley Woodrow sort of position a competition, they're the same sort of style of play. I think it'd be a good acquisition.
Okay, very good. And how would you describe his style of play, James?
He's got that technicality about his play. He seems to like to get in behind the defence, and he's quite as present in the air. And I feel that's sort of a similar role to Cooley, but I don't think it would be a bad thing to have competition for him. Again, it might bring him, competition might bring him up to a new level.
Okay, very good. Andrew, over to you. Your thoughts on this speculation linking Fulham to Manchester United striker James Wilson?
Yeah, that is something I quite like, that idea. When I was going through trying to pick players that Fulham should maybe target, the one I had said was that we could get maybe possibly loan in Adam Armstrong from Newcastle. And they're kind of similar kind of players. They're about the same age. They're not going to break into their home club, and they both be on loan. So it's just swap one for the other. I don't think we necessarily need another striker. It'd be nice to have one for cover. And this is the perfect kind of cover guy who can push Cooley Woodrow, maybe make Matt Smith expendable, or just Matt Smith only used in certain situations. So he's a good guy to have on the team. If McCormick were to go, though, I'm a little hesitant about basically being Wilson and Woodrow being your two main options to start up top. I definitely would think you would need someone else in that case.
Okay, and again, this is speculation. We see these stories all the time. I saw the story yesterday. It made it sound by the headlines that this was looking like it was going to happen. Then I saw stories today linking him to other teams. This is what happens. We'll have to see if this happens. But back to you, James. Would you like to see this happen?
Well, I think it'd be, as you say, it depends purely and simply on if Ross McCormack is staying or leaving. If he stays, then yeah, I think he'll be a good acquisition. If he goes, I think we should push for a bit more prolific goal scorer. So I would say
okay.
I'm happy with it as it stands.
Okay. Let me go back to you because you guys both talking about Cooley, and we've talked a good amount about Cooley. What are your thoughts about Cooley Woodrow as a striker? I've not talked to you about him. Do you still see potential in him, or do you think he is who he is as a striker? Do you think he could be better?
He obviously has that potential. He breaks into the England under-21s, and I feel that he does still own the potential, but whether we're going to see it or not at Fulham is a different matter. He may be one of these players that will prosper a lower championship team. I will give him another season now that Moussa Dembélé is out of the equation. And if he doesn't start picking up a bit more goals, then maybe we should look elsewhere.
Okay. Andrew, back to you. Your thoughts about Cooley Woodrow, you were just mentioning him. How do you feel about him? I don't think I've talked to you about Cooley.
I still like Cooley quite a bit. He just seems to have gotten kind of unlucky. When he's played for Fulham, he's always looked pretty good, and he's scored some goals, and then he'll get hurt or something. You'll bring in someone new, and he just kind of falls down the depth chart. It's like he looks like he's going to break through. The Moussa Dembélé just takes the position and makes it his. He looks like he might get a run, and then, you know, he breaks a bone in his foot. But I think given the opportunity, he could probably still score some goals and be okay. The one thing that's different about him is he's not like the big hold-up player, and he's not really a super athletic player. He's just kind of a guy who gets into good positions and is – very good with the ball. He's technically skilled. So that kind of player really does depend on the people around him a lot more. When he gets the ball and he's got it at his feet, he's going to need to play it off, play 1-2s with someone. You can't just give the ball to him and expect him to create something. So with someone like McCormick, he's going to be okay. But if you take out the quality of McCormick, he could really, really struggle.
Okay, so he needs the players around him. That's basically what you're saying, Andrew.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, one final topic. One final topic involves some of the Fulham youngsters, Ryan Sessegnon, Theo Eden. There are a few others as well. They've been featuring and playing well in these preseason friendlies. James, if you're Slavisa Jokanović, they're playing well. What would be the way that you would handle the youngsters? Would you have them at the under 21 level? Or would you potentially have them part of the first team setup? What would be your approach with someone like Ryan Sessegnon? We've been talking a good amount of him. He has been playing well, but he's only 16 years old. You're a Slavisa. What do you do with his development?
Well, I know it's a hot topic on this podcast to protect the youngsters, and I'm definitely one of those. I think we shouldn't throw him exactly into the deep end, but maybe integrate him into the squad throughout the season, maybe keep him at under 21 level and bring him up for a few games here and there. I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. He's been phenomenal in pre-season. He's scored a goal, he's got an assist or two. He's been looking a great prospect for the future. But yeah, I think we should keep him at under 21 level and maybe, as I say, bring him in here and there.
Okay. Very interesting, because that's exactly what Mike Gregg said. He'd like to see him at under 21 level. Ryan Sessegnon, there are some other really good young players, but Stephen Humphries is another one that could be pushing for, you know, decisions on under 21's first team action at some point. Over to you, Andrew. What would be your approach here with someone like Ryan Sessegnon, Theo Eden, and, of course, Stephen Humphries? Under 21 level? Maybe some first team action. I'm talking about maybe being on the bench. What would you do?
I think I'd probably give them all. I'd say probably Theo, Eden, Dennis, Aiden, Aron. I can't pronounce his last name. I don't know him that well yet. The Luca De La Torre, Stephen Humphries, and Ryan Sessegnon. I'd probably give them all like actual squad numbers, and mainly use them, have them play under 21 on the under 21 team this year. But you'd have them so that they could play in the League Cup, they could play in FA Cup, they could come up, you know, if you have an injury, or and if they start to show well, you can use them. I don't think I would loan any of them out quite yet. I think it still would be beneficial to them to be in the Fulham setup, playing with the U21s, getting to practice with the first team sometimes. But it's mainly those four or five guys that I think could be in and out of the first team, mainly playing with the under 21s and getting a game here or there. But I think just having them there and training with the first team and being around Slavisa will be big for their development.
I definitely agree with that. Definitely agree with that. Very interesting discussion on the youngsters. That is, as James said, the hot topic. All right, guys, it's time to wrap up the show. Before we go, I'd like to get final thoughts from my co-host. First, we'll start with you, James. What are your final thoughts?
Well, at the moment, I'm fully optimistic for the season ahead. I don't want to be too optimistic, but we've shown great signs in pre-season so far. As I said, we played five games, conceded none. What a massive impact for last season anyway. And we scored 19 goals and without the charismatic striker of Ross McCormack. So Slavisa seems to finally have got the team looking and playing the way he wants it. So I have full faith in him.
Okay. Before I go over to Andrew, I want to just say your debut on Cottage Talk was tremendous, my friend. You were very good tonight. You should be very proud. Excellent job, my friend. I hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, sure will.
Okay, great. Andrew, your final thoughts.
Yeah, I'm excited about the season. I haven't always been that way for Fulham over the last couple of years. It's been kind of shaking my head at some decisions, not really sure what they were doing, and just kind of hoping this time everything seems to make sense. Slavisa seems to have a plan. The players seem to be implementing it. The transfers seem to be going along with it. I'm not really that worried about young players leaving and going anywhere else right now. It's just everything seems to be going well. That's usually all the time that the rug gets pulled out from under you. But as of right now, I'm pretty happy. I don't necessarily know that this is a team that can win the division, but it wouldn't shock me if, you know, halfway through the season they were still fighting for, you know, a top six spot in the playoffs.
That's the hope. I just want to see them in the mix for top six. Anything else would be fantastic, but they should be able to be in the mix for top six. Will they be there in the end? Only time will tell, but my hope is that at least they're fighting for it, guys, and that's my hope. My final thoughts basically deal with this show that we've been doing. This is the fourth episode of College's Confidential Roundtable. And, guys, the numbers on the shows have been excellent. I've told you guys we've been having the last three shows have all been over 800. It's been 800 listeners, downloads a show. It's been tremendous. So I look forward to doing more of these. It's a different style of show. And I want to thank the Foam supporters for listening to Cottagers Confidential Roundtable, because the writers of this website are doing an excellent job. They have some great opinions, and this is a way for them to voice their opinions, to be heard, to talk about their articles. And we're going to continue to do this every couple weeks. And I'm just glad that so many people are listening to Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. So before we go, thank you, James. Thank you, Andrew. Great show. But it is time to go. For Andrew and James, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Guys, have a great night.
You too, Russ.
Cheers.
Bye.
Boys.